Accidentally taped over Cave Johnson's final voice recording and found at the bottom of an abandoned salt mine, it's the RF Generation Nation podcast number 12. I'm your host, Jess. You can find me in the RF Generation forums as Slacker.
This is Adam. You guys know me as BicMan2K.
And this episode, we have some front page news stories.
We've got our thoughts on the great PSN shutdown.
A Saturn classic returns to the HD era.
We've got our latest game shoutouts.
And I'll finish with some true stories from the Great Collection Move. New on RFGeneration.com, Game Boy Player Land gets powered up with an article from Noise Redux, in which he provides links for custom levels to the Mega Man remake on PSP, levels that are designed to emulate the original Game Boy release.
These are levels that I will be downloading before my trip to Florida. We've also got an RFG thanks for April 2011, where we have some cool statistics, including our 4,000th member joining, as well as marking our 7th year's site anniversary.
Black Label's Gate gives a nice tutorial on swapping Nintendo 64 joysticks. And if you're anything like me, growing up on some Mario Kart 64, you had plenty of controllers hurtled across the room, so that can come in handy.
Not to mention all the Mario Party games.
I have the glove you could have mail ordered for that, because I did tear my hand open with that control mechanic, and you'll notice they did not repeat it on any of the other Mario Party games. People say that series never innovated, but I think it's what they dropped that's more important.
Mm-hmm. And we've got all these stories and many more on the front page of RFGeneration.com. Well, it looks like since our last episode we've had... Well, for a few episodes, we've been talking about the constant battle between the hackers and the game developers and these companies fighting back and forth, and now here we are. We are in, what, day 20 now?
So if you're listening to the RF Generation Nation podcast on PSN, we'll just wait for you to catch up. We bring up these news stories, and of course we know they're not going to be current by the time people are able to listen to the podcast, but really it's more about how... some of these larger developments affect us as a gaming community at large. And this is right here, that direct application that we were talking about. You know, it's one thing about the gaming economy and hackers and lawsuits and all that. But this right here, this is, you know, in a sense, that worst case scenario.
Yeah, this is completely unprecedented territory that we're walking into. There's been, you know... This is going to do major damage to the PlayStation brand, I think. I mean, there's been some stats showing that the hardware really hasn't slowed down in selling, but it's coming down to it's not just the gamers that are getting angry anymore. You got companies like Capcom that are coming out and saying, this is hurting us. You got to get this fixed.
Although, anecdotally, as a person who works in gaming retail, I have noticed a lot more PlayStation 3 trade-ins, and it's cliche, but I promise this is how it's happening. People are trading in PS3s and Modern Warfare 2 and Black Ops, turning around and getting a 360 and Black Ops and Modern Warfare. It's all we need is an extra copy of Madden thrown in there somewhere for that to, you know, be the ultimate modern gaming cliche, but it's true. And realistically, if you have enough buddies who you've been waiting to jump on the bandwagon, you know, it's why not? Because at this point, who knows when and how to what capacity the PSN is going to be up for online. You know, they say that they're going to return certain services at a time, just kind of testing the waters. But as much as it's easy for a lot of us video gamers, the kind of person who's going to visit RF Generation would whine about the people who only play Call of Duty or only play Madden or that kind of thing. When you think about the people out there who this is really just what they do for this hobby, and that's how they unwind. They come in from a hard day's work. They just want to sit down, you know, blow up a few people for a little while on Call of Duty and then shut it down. And that's their entertainment. You know, that's what they do. And, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, we can talk about how it's a shame that they don't broaden their horizons, et cetera, but if they don't want to, you know, if they just like sitting at home and unwinding to a few hours of Madden, that's, you know, more power to them. And so you're basically killing their entire entertainment opportunity when this kind of service goes down. So, you know, it's a huge deal for a very large population of the gaming community, and that's not even including the gamers who are wanting to play their downloaded titles that can't verify that title online, so, you know, they might have just bought games and they can't play them, and all of the classics that they're wanting to play that they don't have access to. You know, it's just, it's so sweeping because of that online integration to everything we do, from trophy hunting to, you know, to just simply some games that require a sign-on, even disc-based games, to be able to play. I mean, Gran Turismo 5 reminds you every time you boot up, hey, you want to get online? Oh, we can't get online. You know, you know, this really does infiltrate our industry in every way right now. It's not just about, it's a disappointing thing that I can't get online right now and shoot a few people with Call of Duty. You know, this is literally an industry game changer right now. There's been articles where developers are talking about a loss of millions of dollars, and this has altered their projected forecast. You put this on top of the wake of, you know, the disasters in Japan and all of these other things that are racking and wrecking the video game community at large. You know, this is something that no doubt will change the landscape of people's preferences for consoles, at least in the immediate future, if not for some, the long-term future.
You brought up getting in all these copies of Call of Duty, and, you know, at least with Madden, you can sit down on the same TV and play together. I mean, you know, the loss of split-screen gaming is, I mean, that's going to be felt, too, I would say to a certain extent, because you just can't, you know, even if there's a multiplayer game, you can still go back and play Madden on your couch with a couple of buddies.
It does seem pretty obvious, though, that there was not any kind of adequate backup scenario or any kind of crisis management team for this kind of situation.
Yes.
You know, that is quite obvious at this point, especially since Sony dropped the ball with how long that they waited to be able to inform people, to the point to where Congress is even, you know, in the States is getting on their back and saying, all right, you know, give us the details here, because now there's all these lawsuits in question. And, mm-hmm. and that's another thing, you know, depending on where, who knows if those lawsuits are going to go anywhere, but if they do, what's it going to be? And here's the other thing. Is this going to mean that Sony maintains a free service? Because they just rolled out Plus not too long ago, and it had a lot of people impressed with it. But now, are you going to have anyone that trusts the free service? I mean, it's not that Xbox Live never...
I don't even know if I trust the pay service at this point. I was all gung-ho ready to go buy Plus, and then, you know, here we go, you know, 3 weeks after, I'm like, I'm just trying to get a little extra dough up to get the year subscription, and we're down, we're still down, and it is a huge deal. I'm like, I can't imagine, you know, I would hate to be the person that shelled out $50 the day before everything happened.
Interestingly enough, the population of the MAG servers hasn't really changed at all. That's kind of interesting.
Oh,
but
yes.
Sorry, I just had to get that in. But it's not that Microsoft has never had their service down. I mean, they've had up to the point of, you know, a few day blackouts, but the range and scope of the PSN attack is unprecedented. And and then you have the this is truly a sign of our internet age, I think. Anonymous both did and did not do it. That's the part that I find, you know, how are you going to prosecute these rascals? I mean, you can track down, hopefully, maybe, you know, a few of the guys that were largely responsible and whether or not they claim association with Anonymous. But just the very fact of this hacker group Anonymous, where they say they're not centralized, they don't have leadership, which means how can you have a spokesperson? That's kind of interesting. But the fact that they're both denouncing and admitting somebody might have in our ranks done this, you know, it's...
Well, and that's kind of the thing about the whole group is that if you declare that you are part of Anonymous, you're part of Anonymous. I mean, there's nothing really that they can say otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, it's... if they, you know, if these rascals went after the Xbox Live because they were shunned by Microsoft for whatever reason, you know, who's to say that we wouldn't have had the same kind of upheaval with Xbox Live? And then you might have heard an even worse outcry because it's a paid for service. In fact, you know, just raising the cost recently. But there's also, if you have kept up with some of the developer blogs and such on the construction of Xbox Live as well as the PlayStation Network. Microsoft engineers had said for years that Sony was expecting they were going to be able to pull off all this stuff with networking, and that they were not realistic with their expectations. Home was a perfect example. When Sony first announced how much they were going to do with PlayStation Home, you had some of these Microsoft network engineer guys on their blog saying that they can't do that. You don't have the bandwidth and the you know, the rendering. There's all sorts of issues with, you know, unless they have some magical coding that everybody else in the tech world was unaware of, they weren't going to be able to pull that off. And I think that this is perhaps part of the extension of that. I mean, there was certainly, you know, the political factors involved with and then Linux and everything else. But at the same time, maybe they did not have the same kind of security that was necessary. I'm sure that that's very debatable from different angles. But this again, it was easy to blame Sony, but at the same time, this is going to be from now on the danger of our online integration. And, you know, we've talked about like the online service before. Imagine in the future if this happens with online, that the gaming console where it's completely streamed, or not even a console really, it's just almost an interface. You know, with like you mentioned, with PlayStation 3, at least you can still play something at home, maybe a few split-screen games if you want multiplayer or something. With a console like on Live, you know, somebody gets ticked at these guys, that's the whole service. And, you know, it's unlikely that if the online service, the actual online microconsole and stuff, if that goes down for, you know, as long as the PlayStation Network goes on, you know, it doesn't seem like their business model could even sustain that kind of loss. So,
right.
You know, this is... a foreboding, in perhaps, of our future.
This kind of event really has me worried about the pure digital distribution. I mean, I have only purchased a handful of games on either Live Arcade or PSN just because I would prefer to have the disc. I mean, I think most of the people out there would prefer a disc.
Well, like, you know, we've mentioned it before too. This is where the importance of, say, the video game museums, like what has been talked in San Francisco and such, this is where this is going to become very important, because this really is the distribution model that everyone's citing as the wave of the future. So who knows how many years, you know, maybe a few decades it's going to be before, you know, these large-scale collections, such as oftentimes what's posted on RF Generation, Digipress, that kind of thing, you know, those are the relics that you, you know, sometimes that might be all you have left to go back and play if you have a loss of an online service. So, yeah, the, you know, being able to permanently recapture some of the, you know, some of that, what we would classify as essential video gaming as you go through the years, you know, that's going to become more and more important in terms of preservation, especially if everything ends up going into digital. I mean, there's been a large movement over the last decade for prototypes of older games from, you know, Atari on up, you know, to get those things posted online, because those chips are not designed to be permanent, and they're starting to lose their charge. You know, they're starting to, the, you know, capacitors wearing out, all these things, you know, we're losing games that no one else would have a chance to play anyway, and they're about to just disappear. And so there's been movement to try to get those posted online to make sure that at the very least we have some kind of ROM or digital copy there at some point, so that if the physical copy is destroyed, you know, we got something there. So yeah, that preservation aspect is going to just get more and more crucial for us collectors as we move, you know, ever painfully to that pure digital frontier. In other scary, scary gaming news, Microsoft just bought Skype, so perhaps in the future you'll be catching this cast on Xbox Live.
They say in the press release that they're going to support other platforms than Windows, but everyone's afraid that that means that they're going to that the other platforms are going to include Xbox and Windows Phone, and that's it.
Well, you know, earlier Windows models technically supported Netscape.
Oh man.
They paid more for Skype than any other company buyout. I believe it was let's look this up before I feel like an idiot. Wasn't it like paid? 8 billion? Yeah, okay, so I'm not nuts. I did read that right. $8.5 billion for a technology that most tech pundits agree Microsoft didn't need. You know, this technology, it was mainly a defensive maneuver to keep keep like Google and some other, you know, grabby hands from getting the upper hand with it. And the reason why this is relevant for gaming to us is that once again it's something that like you just alluded to, they're planning on filtering this into gaming platforms. You know, Xbox Live already has the chat system, the video chat. If they integrate Skype into those models and then the phone and all that kind of stuff, you know, that's another huge step for the complete telecommunication integration of, you know, that classic one box. It does it all. You know, you turn your 360 on, your 720 on, whatever it's going to be then, and, you know, you chat with grandma before you get on your next Call of Duty. You know, it's that furthering of the one box that was the original initial dream for the Xbox or the direct Xbox. So that you have that ability to stream everything all in one place. So it's, again, you know, it's that digital frontier of trying to fit everything together. And this is, I think, going to be one of those milestones we look back on and realize this was another big step they were taking to try to, you know, it seems unlikely now that the next Xbox system you buy is not going to have a further progression on all of that technology of being able to replace, you know, parts of your iPhone and parts of your DVR and, you know, the same thing that Sony's been doing, all of them's been doing, except for Nintendo.
Nintendo's just sitting back. Just come play our games. That's it.
You remember the old advertisement where it showed the two girls? One was a PS3 who was like this kind of heavier set business lady, and you had the skimpy blonde in the bikini, and she's like, "I'm fun. I'm the Wii." Yeah. It was hilarious, but it also perfectly captured the Nintendo spirit, you know, where people can sit there and talk about, oh, look at your graphics, they're terrible, look at, you know, your online service, it's practically non-existent, you know, all this, and then you just had the Nintendo just kind of like, but I'm fun!
Well, to be fair, I mean, I did kind of prefer the Wii graphics in that commercial than the PS3, so...
wait till you see it in 3D.
Yeah, on your own little personal, you know, 6-inch screen. Oh man, you saw that—the Wii 2 release, rumored controllers and stuff.
Yeah, it.
That'll be a trip if that happens. That will be a trip.
In the words of Cave Johnson, at this point, we're just kind of throwing signs against the wall and seeing what sticks. I mean, it sounds like they're just.
Every innovation that Nintendo's made with the Wii and then DS has stuck. It seems like they've had these ideas pinned back for years, and it's just been a matter of waiting for the technology to catch up to where they're wanting to get to where they're wanting to get it, so that they can produce not just a half-hearted attempt at it, where it just kind of works, but so they can actually produce something that produces a well-done, well-working product.
at the same time, though, you risk completely turning any reasonable game into gimmicks. I believe it was one of the execs from Ubisoft that said that he sees a lot of PlayStation 3 and 360 ports coming to this new Nintendo platform. And, you know, I believe it. That's kind of how a lot of platforms have treated the DS, likely how they'll treat the 3DS, probably even likely how they'll treat Sony's next platform, which also seems to be taking that, let's just cram it full of all this awesome stuff and pray that somebody uses some of it some of the time.
Yeah, and that's kind of how it's, I mean, we really even kind of saw that on the Wii, too, where, you know, we got ports of Okami from the PS2 onto the Wii. I mean, it seems like just, I mean, based on what are the rumored specs, Nintendo's actually going to come out with a powerhouse of a machine.
At least until the next PS, you know, 4 or what have you, and
sure,
another
but,
Xbox.
Sure, but Nintendo's trying to jump the gun on this time, where they've been, you know, they haven't been first out of the gate in the last two generations. And now they're looking to possibly launch at the end of this year, if not quarter one next year.
Well, yeah, it's like Pachter said, who, as an analyst, I give him credit for being accurate about as often as a fortune cookie, but he said that he thought Nintendo was completely done because they hadn't released a new console yet. And I can kind of see, in a way, why he would say that, but I don't, you know, until Sony and Microsoft announce the window for their next system, it's still Nintendo's game, in my opinion. You know, I think that Nintendo is really has been in control of what Sony's doing with their portable market with the release to the 3DS, especially since sales have cooled. Then again, you know, when you look at the software lineup, it's not entirely surprising. But I think that, you know, really the reason why no one's nailed down the official release for the next gen, so to speak. It's always funny to toss those words around anymore. Next generation. But the next PlayStation and the next Xbox, you know, I don't think – it seems like Nintendo's really in control now of the time frame, because – you know they're not going to want to cut each other's throats, and they're going to want to be able to show something, you know, like you're not going to – Sony's not going to want to pull a six-axis to a DualShock 3, you know.
Right.
Microsoft's not going to want to get stuck with another DVD player. there's a tug of war in the tech market, and really that benefits us as gamers, because it means that they're going to try to – you know, try to one-up each other, if you forgive me for the term, as they get close to release, how they're going to, you know, what they're going to release hardware-wise and also, of course, price point. I don't see Sony throwing out another $500 or $600 console. At least I pray that they don't, because at this point,
yeah.
At this point, they need to generate all the goodwill that they can. Not that they've ever paid attention to that either, but...
yeah, the thing is, now that we're, I mean... Your TV is at pretty much the highest definition that you're going to be at for some time. I mean, we're going to get the 1440s and all this 4K and all, you know, all that kind of just stupidly expensive, you know, stuff. The 1080p is pretty much it's de facto at this point. The hardware is not going to be what changes the game. It's going to be, the core hardware behind it. It's not going to be the powerhouse of, you know, what is driving the graphics. It's going to have to be innovation. And that's, I mean, Nintendo started that move by not throwing out the latest hardware, but by using innovation and wiped the floor with everybody else. And by... now, waiting to release their HD console, they can do some wild things with it.
Yeah, and the way the market's spoken about those innovative control mechanisms really speaks to what people are looking for in games now. I mean, now you've got this huge casual market that's looking for something mm-hmm. new to play. Everybody jokes about how there's so few great games on the Wii. And also how there's practically nothing out for Kinect. And yet these two consoles, or two systems, have sold better than anything else, you know, comparatively.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's so strange that so many people have bought these things, and yet the universal complaint is there's nothing to play on it. So it shows the hunger there, especially, I think, for that huge recent casual demographic that's trying to, you know, poke and prod at something else to find that connects that casual transition into something where you have more perpetual players. I think you're completely on the dot, as Nintendo was when they said, you know what, you know, better graphics is not going to last us forever. We got to get something that's going to make that transition for you know, your occasional players to someone who's going to sit in front of a screen for a few hours at a time and play something.
I mean the biggest complaint that I've heard about that's been out just all over for years now is that the Wii just all it has is shovelware on it. You go back and look at, you know, the PS2 library, as great of games as are on there, there's a ton of shovelware on the PS2. There's shovelware on everything. I mean, that's up to the developers. It's not Nintendo producing shovelware, it's third parties, especially with the Wii's dev kit being only, you know, even at launch, only $1,500. That allows anybody to really get in and make a game. Just to imagine what you can do with a, you know, the rumored controller having a touchscreen, a pretty good sized touchscreen along with controls. If that's what comes to be,
maybe I'll finally get that Aliens vs. Predator Atari Jaguar port where I have the portable system with the actual motion detector while I'm hunting. I wanted them to release that proto for years.
I thought you were going to say you're going to have the joysticks and buttons on the side, but then the touchscreen in the middle would just be the actual Jaguar number pad on it.
I'm sure there's going to be some terrible shovelware that'll do that mechanic.
So we're finally going to get our Jaguar Classics Collection. All one game of it.
There's been so much demand. That's not true. They had Tempest. I still play Tempest to this day.
I said one game.
Okay, Aliens vs. Predator was maybe not as good as Tempest.
But. Yeah. Just got one thing before we move on. To go back real quick to the Microsoft Skype deal, that means that Microsoft now owns part of the app that runs on the PSP.
Well, it's not like they're going to be too worried about the 50 people who are out using it. So,
I mean, yeah.
I know so few people who own a PSP who only use it for just the stock UMD games and occasional like video or music. It's so strange that it's just been completely adopted as the hack tool.
It is the hack tool. It is the king of all hack tools. Especially when they released the 2000, you double the RAM in that thing, that will do some pretty cool things. I mean, you get N64 games going on it, PlayStation, you know, I mean, it's got PlayStation, you know, games already built into it, but you can actually load your own. I loaded Twins and Odyssey on the thing.
Please note that RF Generation Nation does not condone any legal uses of PSP hardware.
Yeah.
It's almost a good thing we're not more popular so that we don't get sued nearly as often.
I mean, really, but it's not like we're linking any of this stuff, but...
Yeah, it was the first system I ever heard where people who didn't even care about emulation said, hey, I got a PSP with, like, you know, 500 games on it from various consoles, you know. Mm-hmm. Occasionally you'd hear somebody with an Xbox with that, but... Yeah, the PSP was just like the wonder tool for that kind of thing. And I bet that once the PSP is completely discontinued for at least a few more years, the price on that thing is going to stay pretty high because that's what everyone's going to want to pick it up for. It does have some awesome games in its library, but I have no doubt that in the years to come, the PSP will be largely popularized by it, you know, kind of the more slightly underground community of gamers who just use it to throw all their Neo Geo games on. Mm-hmm.
Now, you know one other handheld console that was very well known for emulation? Tapwave Zodiac.
Not that anyone knew. Well, let's round out the what's new in gaming here with just, you know, there's so many releases that come out. I remember in our initial podcasts, we were thinking about trying to keep up with new releases, which of course now is just a laughable idea. But every now and then, one flies on the radar that I just want to mention. They are releasing Guardian Heroes HD for the Xbox Live Arcade, and I am thrilled about this. It is a bona fide Saturn classic. Not the most expensive game to try to go back and pick up for the Saturn, but also, you know, kept its price. And there is excellent reason for that, because it is a pure classic. It designed by Treasure. It takes the original Brawler type side-scrolling formula with changing parallax levels to be able to go like back and forward across the screen. It adds RPG elements where you level up your characters. It has a very distinctive anime style and flavor with cinema scenes. It has all sorts of different endings and twists and variations on how to play through level selection and hidden extras. It's got a multiplayer brawl mode where you could originally have up to 6 people just going nuts on it, to the point of where you could play NPCs and villagers who had no real attacks. And even a little bunny character so that you could recreate the Monty Python Holy Grail scenes, which we did in Infamy and recorded on a VCR, showing my age. The idea that they're coming out with an HD upgrade to this game, it's supposed to be the exact original game, but also with the option to turn on some HD filtering. And it's supposed to only pop in for $10, and I have to throw that out there. If you've never played Guardian Heroes on the Saturn due to, you know, that was before you were born, or that it was always too much for you to grab, download the demo at minimum. I'm going to buy it day one, because we still return to Guardian Heroes every now and then and just have a blast with it. So I just, yeah, read about that, and I had to get that out there as a recommendation. Which sounds like a great transition to our gaming shout-out.
Yeah, the scary thing is that you said might not have even been born yet. Yeah, the game came out in 96, and that the fact that the game is 15 years old, and that we may potentially, I have no idea, we may potentially have listeners that are 15 years old is kind of bizarre to me.
And if this is you, go to bed. It's past your bedtime. I don't care if you're listening to this at 10 o'clock in the morning. Somebody's watching you. I guess that means we can't say any dirty words anymore.
No, we can, because they just went to bed.
Oh, good. Okay, now we're clear. All right. So, what have you been playing lately, Mr. Adam?
Well, I actually got a code, but they haven't released it yet. I'm anxiously awaiting my Duke Nukem Forever demo to come in. Oh, what about you, Jess? What have you been getting into?
Well, my gaming has been very, very limited because anyone who's kept up a little bit on the blogs and forums on RF Generation would know I just bought a house. Yeah! And I don't have the time to get into the sitcom-esque nuttiness that happened in the process of me finally getting this home, moving in, and getting set up. But it's the short version is it's been weeks and weeks since I've been able to have access to my gaming library. And so I've been very limited on what I've been able to play. Two things I wanted to give a shout-out to, one of which is Vorpal, V-O-R-P-A-L, for it's an indie game on Xbox Live Arcade, on Xbox Live. And it is a bullet hell shooter, very simplified, very refined. It's basically you against another ship dodging bullet patterns. The aesthetics are simplified and gorgeous. It uses a very plain palette of like white, black, and red. The mechanics are easy to pick up and understand. It's a very simple game, and yet it's very refined, very addictive, very fast-paced, and very atmospheric, strangely enough, for as simple as it is. But I highly, highly recommend Vorpal. At the very least, go on the indie channel, you know, the thing that you've neglected once you got through with I Made a Game with Zombies in It. Go back to it, look it up, and try out at least the demo. It's a buck, and I haven't spent a better buck on a video game since RC Pro-Am. So, highly recommend checking that out. The other one, and most of our listenership will probably be well aware of this by now, found Portal 2 on sale. If you enjoyed the original Portal, I cannot see how you would be disappointed. I really can't. They just knocked this one out of the park. It has the same kind of deadpan humor, flow, feel, twist your head around these relatively simple physics mechanics to create puzzles that you always overthink. the co-op mode is, in my opinion, just pitch perfect with their balancing and cooperative elements. The single player is just completely refined. I think it is far, far better than you could expect, in my opinion, a Portal sequel to be. I remember when we first finished Portal years back, like 3.5 years now back, that we were thinking, man, the most disappointing thing about finishing Portal is that how could they make a sequel to that? It was the right length, the right tone. How could you extend that? It wouldn't really be as good of a game. And I read several gaming journals that kind of remarked the same thing. It's like, you know, they kind of wrapped this up well. You know, there really wasn't anywhere else to go with this that wouldn't have made it, you know, eventually get tedious or even downright boring at times, if not outright frustrating. Of course, these same pundits are now the folks that are saying Portal 2 was too short, but, you know, I digress. I cannot recommend it enough if you enjoyed the original Portal. And if you never got to play the original Portal, you should still buy this game. It's been on sale in various locations. That's why I was able to pick it up when all my other stuff was still boxed up. Yeah, definitely gets 2 thumbs up over here.
Voting is finally over for the last caption contest, and now it's been quite a while since we first started this one, but that's just kind of the way things go sometimes. We had some pretty good entries this time. We had, of course, the
picture. If you weren't spending all your time on Animal Crossing, we could have had this done by now.
We had some pretty good entries. One I enjoyed was a little adaptation of the Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer bit from Saturday Night Live. But we also had some, of course, the picture was Rob playing the 3DO. We had a couple including, that's strange, I wasn't programmed to have feelings, and yet I can't help but be a little furious that I spent $700 on this thing. We also had one said, if our love is wrong, I don't want to be right. But based on your votes, our winner was Dead Man, with the caption, "Can someone come press the start button for me? My hands are full." So, Deadman, I will be getting in contact with you to get your choice for classic gaming ringtone that I can make for you and send to your email. So, everybody else out there, be sure to check out rfgeneration.com for any upcoming contests that we are going to have.
Yeah, this is part of the RF Generation Nation that we're wanting to ramp up, you know, just for some listener
interaction. Right,
yeah, that's what we do with you people. And yeah, just to have some fun. Yeah, be sure to pop into the forums and give us some suggestions, or you know, just to kind of pass back and forth. And now we're going to close out with a bit of a derivative off of our top five. Normally, we just come up with something, you know, quick and pithy out of, you know, 5 seconds off the top of our head for a top five. This is a list of actual true stories from this crazy move that I went through after I bought a house and transporting, you know, 6,500 video games from one locale to the other. These are the top five ways being a gamer literally helped me move. And again, these are all true stories. Number five, the power was turned off early at the old place that we used to live, and I had to use the Modern Warfare 2 night vision goggles to pack my stuff at night at the house. That thing takes like 8 batteries. I actually had to go out and buy a new pack of batteries just to run the thing. Also, for some reason, I don't know if it's true with all night vision goggles because, because I'm not a drug runner or in the military, but apparently night vision goggles make you see a distance out of like several feet ahead of where you're actually at. So, you know, I'd look down and think that things were like way, way out, and then I trip and fall on something. So, number four. Apparently, it only takes about 50 boxed Genesis games to crush a mouse to death. I wish I were kidding on this. I had my Genesis games all in just various stacks in a closet. And I found something unpleasant when I was unburying the Genesis games. You know, as a collector, there's that moment where you're looking at this big stack of games and realizing that you might should never really touch some of these ever, ever again. And then you're like, but I have a disinfectant and plastic. It kind of, should I? Oh, man. I wish I were kidding. Anyway, number three, Mario Kart DS is apparently an excellent method for making sure a 3- and 4-year-old stay out of the way for backing. My oldest son now has more things unlocked than I do. He was an expert at the Wii game before I gave him the DS one. Now there's no stopping him. My 3-year-old just likes to turn the system on and off. Apparently the Nintendo chime is like an addiction for him. I don't know why. Number two, my new cable guy was ready to give up getting internet to the bottom floor until I told him about our 360 LAN parties. And then after that, he was suddenly ready to drill through block wall to be able to get a signal in there. Now I have my basement wired up, so I'm pretty happy about that. It would have been pretty devastating. And the number one way being a gamer literally helped me in my move. After my tractor got stuck in the mud behind my house, and then my truck got stuck in front of the tractor trying to pull it out, I had to have something to shoot at inside my house for the next several days while it rained and rained and rained and rained. Thank you, Homefront. You saved my sanity and possibly some of my children. Speaking of which, it's time for us to move along to. If you have any questions, thoughts, queries, moving stories, personality spheres, or topic suggestions, be sure to post them on our forums at www.rfgeneration.com.
As always, you guys can use the site to track your game collection. You can post your own blog, talk with us on the forums. You can also send us an email at podcast@rfgeneration.com or chat with us live in IRC in channel RF Generation on QuakeNet. And one more way you can get in touch with us, you can give us a phone call and leave us a message. The phone number is area code 318-RFG-TIP-5. That's area code 318-734-8475.
As always, thanks for listening. God bless and game on.
And of course, don't forget to keep it on channel 3.